Welcome to the Ortho Eval Pal podcast, where we can help you build confidence with your orthopedic evaluation and management skills. We hope you enjoy the show. And now, for your host, Paul Marquis.
Hello and welcome to episode 325 of the Ortho Eval Pal podcast. I'm your host, Paul Marquis, and today we're going to be talking about meniscus tear management. We're going to talk about when patients should go to an orthopedic specialist right away after knee injury. We're going to talk about treatment concepts for the patient with a meniscus tear. We'll discuss if we should brace them or not. And we'll talk about what to do if the patient is not responding conservatively and so much more. But if you don't mind holding for a moment, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor.
Did you know that over 90% of foot and ankle problems are caused by a tight calf muscle? Introducing the Easy Slant, a durable, adjustable, and portable calf stretching device. The Easy Slant was designed to increase stretching compliance and get you back on your feet and feeling better faster. So if you work with patients seeking to ease or avoid foot pain, or clients who want to improve their athletic performance, look no further. Visit easyslant.com to learn more or order yours today. Enter coupon code OEP for a 10% discount on your first Easy Slant.
Hello. For those of you who listened to last week's episode, welcome back. If you are a first-time listener, it might behoove you to stop here, go back to episode 324 and listen to part one of this topic on meniscus tears. It'll make this transition a little bit smoother for you. But if you want to just listen today, I'm sure you're going to get plenty out of today's episode. And again, if this is your first time listening to the Ortho Eval Pal podcast, welcome to the show. This is where we chat all things orthopedic, and we hope to be able to just increase your confidence with the evaluation and management of orthopedic injuries. That is why we made Ortho Eval Pal. So welcome. Okay, we're going to get started now, and we're going to chat a little bit about, you know, how do we take care of these patients who come in who have a suspected meniscus tear? And notice I titled this episode Meniscus Tear Management. When I give live courses, we talk about the comprehensive evaluation and management of knee injuries, shoulder injuries, cervical and lumbar spine injuries. I call it management because, yes, there are a lot of things that we can treat, but there are many instances where we have to make a decision when somebody comes in if we feel that they will respond to conservative management, or if we identify that they will absolutely not respond, we have to now manage them. You know, where do they go from here? Do we connect back with their primary care provider? Do we send them to an orthopedic specialist? Do they need an MRI? What kind of direction do we send them in? So oftentimes we are helping to manage these patients more so than just treat them alone. But we will be talking about treatment today. But I also like to put in that management piece so that you understand that, I've had many patients who come in and I see them and I say to them, listen, you do not belong in my office. Okay. You need to have surgery, or you have something that is super serious here that needs to be addressed. You are surgically urgent, whatever it might be. We will then manage them at that point and not necessarily treat them. All right. So here in front of us, we have our patient with the suspected meniscus tear. All right. If that patient comes in, you evaluate them, and it looks like that knee is locked. Like you try to extend them or maybe flex them, and it is a very sharp pain in the knee, and you feel like it's more of a firm endpoint. You just can't get past that, and it's not very springy. You need to be concerned with a possible bucket handle type tear or something where there is cartilage stuck in the joint somewhere. These people need to see a surgeon and or have an MRI at least to identify what that is. So these folks, you don't want to push hard through. They need some surgical management. But most of the folks who have meniscus tears will come in with an effusion in the knee. So globalized swelling, the joint line will be tender. There'll be some fullness in the popliteal space oftentimes, because when you have an effusion, that doesn't just swell around the anterior aspect of the knee, right? It'll head into that Baker cyst area and cause a Baker cyst or a fullness back there. We know the two biggest reasons why people have Baker cysts, and number one is because they have arthritis causing an intra-articular effusion. Number two, because they have an intra-articular structure that is torn causing effusion. All right. So look for that popliteal fullness or Baker cyst. That's common with meniscus tears too. They'll come in with a flexed knee posture. They like to keep that knee slightly bent because, number one, if you just put fluid inside the knee, it goes to the loose pack position, which is 20 to 25 degrees of flexion. They also like to be in this position because they're unstable in full extension, and they like to use that quad and hamstring in their most effective positions to help stabilize the knee, and they feel comfortable there. All right. And a lot of these folks are going to end up with quadriceps suppression. Remember that effusion causes capsular distension. They've done some great studies where they take, a saline solution, they inject it inside the knee, cause a little capsular distension, and they, you know, test these patients to find they have like a 20% loss of quad strength immediately after having that fake swelling put into the knee. So we know that is a big part of the problem. So in managing or treating these patients, sometimes getting some NSAIDs on board can help. I don't always do this if the injury happened like today or yesterday. I usually let them get 3 or 4 days under their belt of their natural inflammatory process, trying to take care of business. But if you're a couple weeks down the road and you're still quite swollen, taking some NSAIDs can help, as long as there are no contraindications to doing that. And that can help decrease the inflammation and swelling, which decreases the pain, and therefore the quad will start to function a little bit better. With that being said, we want to really reactivate these quads. Okay, they're the quickest to shut down, especially the VMO, whenever there's swelling, pain, or instability in the knee. So I always have them try to actively set the quad. Okay, if they can't do it in full extension, I always put a little towel roll under the knee, and I have them try to do it on their own. If they can actively do a nice quad set, that's great. That's a bonus. But if they can't, then you need to help them along with learning how to do that better. Because it's not just how hard or how strong you can contract that quad, it's how well can you turn it on after you've had a knee injury. Okay? Because we need that muscle to turn on to fire fast, especially if there's a change in direction. And so that's very important. If they can't do it actively, jump onto a biofeedback machine. Throw some biofeedback on that VMO and see if you can then get them to understand how to tighten that quad better. If that's not working, I do some patella facilitation where I push the patella superiorly, inferiorly, and then when I get to pushing them inferiorly, I tell them go, and they contract their quad. It's a little stretch mechanism, that stretch reflex that helps them to get to contract that quad better. And if that doesn't work, I will then try some NMES or Russian stimulation to get that quad to fire up, but they have to work with it, okay? So the NMES is not there to help build strength. It is there to help re-educate the quad. I will then work on some isometric knee extensions at variable angles. They have no choice but to contract the quad in order to do that. So I find the angle that is comfortable for them. And it might be at 90 degrees, might be at 60 degrees, 45 degrees, 30 degrees. I might do variable angles as long as they're not uncomfortable. Typically, these folks are going to be most uncomfortable at the end range of flexion and extension, where the anterior and posterior horns are going to get stressed the hardest, and they'll be most pressure on those. And then I'll start right off with trying to gain full extension. We know that if you can get better extension, you'll get a better quad set and ultimately better function down the road. So I do a lot of low load, long duration stretches with the patient, as long as it feels like it's a nice, good stretch, but not a very sharp pain. I'll add a bunch of videos on how I like to gain extension. There are multiple ways to do it with multiple devices. And if you don't have devices, there are other ways to do it. So I'm going to give you a ton of options with the video that I've put together here, and they are a little bit old, but they are evergreen, and they are activities that I will continue to do with my patients for as long as I'm a therapist. Now, We can't forget the ankle. We can't forget the hip. We can't forget the hamstrings. We want to get everything above and below working and functioning, especially if they haven't been walking well or maybe they've been on crutches. There's nothing wrong with, you know, getting the core activated, starting to stabilize the hip in all planes, and making sure that we get that ankle moving, because that calf will atrophy pretty quickly, and we want to prevent things like a DVT and atrophy. So these are the types of folks that if they're a couple weeks after their injury, I am definitely going to throw them onto some blood flow restriction training. Because we're not able to give them heavy loads, you can do high repetition, low load activities and get the same effects to start to work on getting some hypertrophy in the muscle and prevent so much atrophy. And I've also had some pretty good success with getting rid of swelling with the use of BFR. And so it's definitely something I do with a lot of my patients, especially those who can't be super active and push really hard at first. As soon as I can get them onto a bike, I like to do that because I like that pumping action. Some may not have enough range of motion. We have a bike that has a modified pedal on it that works really well, and so we can bring that pedal close to the center of the crank, and they don't have to go through such a large range of motion. As they get better, we just move that pedal away from the crank more and more to get a more full, you know, fuller stroke, and that works really well to get people moving and active, get their cardio up there a little bit. I'll then start to progress these patients into weight bearing, some gait training activities. We want to make sure they increase their stance time and get better knee range of motion, you know, when they're walking. I like to do shuttle leg presses, double and single legged, because I can start them with a really light weight and get them comfortable with that closed chain knee extension type activity, which simulates so much of your everyday activity, like going up and down stairs or getting up off a chair, getting up out of a car, those types of things. And so I really get into, you know, the closed chain activity and then progress that into function. Okay, if it's getting back to sports, then it's slowly getting them back to higher speed activities. Now, here is a question that I get a lot of, okay? Can I just wear a brace and get back to playing sports? Can I wear a brace and go back to work? You know, and everybody comes in with their little brace that they get, kind of an off-the-shelf type of thing. And here's the deal. You can wear a brace. Let's say you're wearing a brace with hinges. Well, that's really not going to make much difference, because there is no brace out there that prevents a direct axial load of the tibiofemoral joint, right? There is no brace that separates the tibia from the femur. So it doesn't matter what you're wearing for brace, you're going to be loading that knee. Then there is no brace out there that stops the rotation of the tibia on the femur or femur on the tibia. Okay, not unless you put a nail through the femur and a nail through the tibia and you secure them into the brace that way, that tibia and femur can still rotate. And I've seen people injure themselves while in braces, okay? So there's nothing that's going to stop the axial load. There's nothing that's going to stop the rotation. All right, both which are mechanisms that contribute to a tear of the meniscus. What I do find to be quite helpful, though, is a compression sleeve. Because remember, ice does not get rid of swelling, right? The two best ways to get rid of swelling are compression and elevation. So you can get that compression to decrease the swelling, which will increase the quad contractibility. And then the sleeve will give you a lot more contact on the surface around the knee, around the lower leg, and then even into the quad region and distal femur, and give you some proprioceptive feedback. And I find that to be just about as beneficial as anything else. So I'm huge on knee sleeves with patients. So I want you to remember this. Not all meniscus tears are going to get better, okay? Actually, most of them won't heal themselves, okay? Because they're very avascular, and there are a lot of people out there who tear the meniscus, you treat them, and they just don't respond. They end up having to have surgery, all right? The way I look at this is, number one, you're not damaging the patient by doing straight plane activities, getting rid of swelling, optimizing their quad, calf, and hamstrings. If they do get stronger and they still have pain, they are going to just do that much better when they have a meniscectomy or a meniscus repair, okay? So basically prehabbing them. All right. A lot of these folks, some of them will get better. And if so, hey, that's icing on the cake. But some of them just won't. And, you know, they may hit a brick wall, you might plateau, and they may have a little less swelling, maybe their quad's working better, but they still have difficulty squatting or pivoting or turning, or maybe some nighttime pain. Then an MRI is certainly indicated, and or a trip to the orthopedic specialist can help. What can they do at that point? Well, sometimes an injection can be helpful if it's really more of just getting rid of the rest of that inflammation in the knee. And sometimes arthroscopic surgery is indicated. 20 years ago, when I sent somebody to an orthopedic surgeon for meniscus tear, I told him basically, you know, you're going to go in, you're going to have this meniscus clipped out, this piece of tear will be taken out, and then you'll be back in therapy. We start you right up, and then you're on your way, and things go really well. Well, now we look at that a lot differently. Orthopedic surgeons are repairing menisci a lot more than they used to, okay? Because of all of this knowledge that we've acquired over many years, understanding that a meniscus tear can lead to early arthritic changes, they are starting to repair these a lot more. These are typically done in younger folks. If you have a meniscus tear and you have moderate arthritis in your knee, there's no sense trying to fix that because, number one, the surgery can actually flare up the arthritic knee joint and make it worse. And number two, if you are going to be looking at a knee replacement at some point in the near future, then trying to fix that meniscus doesn't really make sense because the recovery from a meniscus repair is considerably longer and more disabling than having a meniscectomy, okay? So it's something to take into consideration when you're talking to your patients, you know, when they're heading off to their surgeon. It's possible they could have a meniscectomy or a repair, and that could be a long recovery, but typically best for the long run, okay? As far as preserving the joint and decreasing the risk of developing severe osteoarthritis in the knee. So there we have it, folks. I know we covered a lot in a short time. If you have any questions, let me know. Hit the link in the show notes and send that directly to my email. I'll be more than happy to try to get you an answer as soon as possible. And thank you so much for listening to OEP. Be kind to each other and take care.
We hope you've enjoyed the show. For some more awesome content, go to OrthoEvalPal.com.